Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. What can I get for you?
All right, this is really specific. I need a 40-year-old cold case solved by DNA results. Got anything like that?
Pull up to the second window and we'll see you next crime.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. I'm John, here with Jamie. As always, we've got a true crime story in 10 minutes or less. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I always enjoy watching you work your way through the unscripted order at the True Crime to Go window. That was a good job.
Seriously, one of the hardest things I've done all week.
It's really tough, but we only got 10 minutes, so why don't you get the ball rolling on this case?
Sadly, in my day job, I work with lots of young people with mental health disorders, with developmental disabilities, and sometimes those people have to live in group homes or facilities rather than a home setting, and it actually breaks my heart to see kids having to live in those types of situations. And I think that is why this case in particular got my attention. So we're going to go back to 1979. We're going to talk about Janie Landers, who at the time was 18 years old, and she was placed in a residential facility called Fairview Training Center. Now, this was located in Oregon. Now, while Janie was 18, it was reported that she was really small in stature, and sadly, her mental capacity was that of an 8-year-old. And on March 9th, 1979, Janie Landers went AWOL, absent without leave, from that facility, and she was gone for a few hours before police were called. Apparently, she had a history of going AWOL, but then she would always come back.
Once police arrived, they, of course, started interviewing people that she had interacted with during that particular day. One man named Bill Gaff told police that around 2 p.m., Janie stomped out of his classroom when he told her he wasn't able to work with her anymore due to a change in her insurance. He assumed that she was headed toward her cottage on campus, but staff there said that she never made it back to her cottage. Another staff member came forward with information. This was Leona Ways, who worked the afternoon shift. And when she was approaching the campus, she saw a young woman that she recognized as a resident talking to a man standing by a gold car. The man was standing close to the lady, who was later identified as Janie Landers. Leona felt that something was off, but Fairview had very strict rules not to transport residents, so she continued her drive to work and didn't stop and offer Janie a ride.
Once Leona heard Janie was missing, she figured out that the young lady she saw was definitely Janie. She told police that a man was speaking with Janie. He was middle-aged, he had shaggy hair, and a bit of a pot belly. Now, Jamie, this description also matched Bill Gaff, who was the last person to have been seen with Janie before she went AWOL. On March 15th, 5 days after she went AWOL, a landowner called police and told them that they had found a body on his land. Police found Janie deep in a brush patch, and she was laying face down. And when they turned her over, they could see that she had died from multiple stab wounds. Police searched the area and determined that this was likely just a dump site, that she was probably killed somewhere else and then brought here to be discarded because there was no physical evidence around the scene. However, they did find in her hands, which was clenched, hair from her attacker. Now, her autopsy would later reveal that she had actually died from blunt force trauma to the head, and then she was stabbed. It also showed that she was not sexually assaulted during this attack.
With Gaff last seeing her and matching the description of the man seen talking to her on the road, police thought that they had their man. But when he agreed and passed the polygraph test, police were back at square one. And John, I know you and I go back and forth about polygraph exams. I don't think they should rule out a suspect. I think they can tell you a lot just by somebody's willingness to participate, but I actually don't agree with just moving on. Police also spoke with some of the roommates who had problems with Janie, but nothing panned out from any of those interviews. So with no great evidence, her case went cold. Fast forward to 2015, and Janie's sister Joyce called the Oregon State Police and asked them to reopen the case to see if they could use DNA to solve the crime. In crime scene photos, police knew that she had been stabbed with a knife that had no hilt. that's the piece that protects your hands from being cut on the blade. So stabbing somebody with as much force as what had to have happened to Janie would most likely cause them to cut themselves. So more likely than not, there would be the blood of the perpetrator on that knife. Police sent her shirt as well to be DNA tested. And thankfully, Janie's killer had left some blood on the shirt from the attack.
We often talk about these cold cases, and how often, man, is it that critical pieces of evidence go missing? Because, I mean, that's almost 40 years. You know what I'm saying? So thank God they had that shirt and they were able to find blood on it from the attacker. So when they ran DNA through CODIS, they actually got a match, and that was that of Gerald Dunlap and not Gaff, who I know you were probably expecting to be responsible.
No, I'm not saying he was responsible. I just don't think a polygraph is enough to rule somebody out.
So a little bit about Gerald Dunlap. Dunlap was actually sentenced in 1961 in Tennessee for rape. He was given a 99-year sentence. 99-year sentence, but he only served 12 years before going on parole. In 1973, Dunlap moved to Oregon. He got a job working at, wait for it, the Fairview Training Center. He was working in the laundry room, and nobody ran a background check before he was hired. Police knew that he was working at the same location Janie had lived, and when they showed Leona a photo lineup, she knew that Dunlap was the man that she had seen on the road that day speaking with Janie. Sadly, Gerald Dunlap had died in prison in 2002, so he was not able to be charged for this crime. So while he did die in prison, he was actually serving another sentence of sexually abusing a minor family member. There's no justice in this case. This young girl died by a monster, but I would have loved to seen him go through the court process and, you know, formally give justice, but at least he did die in prison. I know that's probably a harsh thing to say, but I mean, going back up to the little bit we know about him, he was given a 99-year sentence, basically a life sentence for sexually assaulting someone. He only served 12 years. If they would have actually let him carry out his sentence, we wouldn't be talking about this case today.
No, we wouldn't. And Janie may still be alive. And you go and look at it, and 16, 12 years. He served 12 years of a 99-year sentence. If you're going to let him out early, at least get halfway. My goodness, why are we giving people parole so early into these sentences? We were asked the other day on a podcast we were guests on of what are some pet peeves you have. And this never crossed my mind as being a pet peeve, but obviously people getting let out early from harsh sentences that they deserve is apparently a pet peeve of mine.
I mean, basically, I'm going to say it's safe to round 99 up to 100. You have a 100-year sentence and you served basically a tenth of it. That is not okay.
That's not justice for the victim of that initial sexual assault. It led to the death and assault of others. No justice here.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, guys, thank you for tuning in each and every week to True Crime To Go, a true crime story in 10 minutes or less.
We appreciate you guys.
Would you like crime with that?
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.